Welcome to session 133, titled The Malnourished Children of Madagascar. Please turn off your cell phones and remember that we want this experience to be more than just a conference. We want you to interact and get involved. That's why we've provided tomatoes at the back of the... I'm just kidding. Sunstone is a community. We challenge you to make a new friend today, to reach out to someone who was here alone, and to leave a piece of yourself with the community. Please use today as an opportunity to expand your intellectual and social horizons and also charitable horizons, since you're in this particular session. This session is being recorded, and you'll be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the Sunstone Magazine podcast, where you'll get to hear my voice every week. Concessions will be open in the venue for lunch after this session, or you're welcome to visit local restaurants in the area, but please return by 1:45 to get a seat in the next session. This session is 60 minutes long, and I will be using an iron fist to make sure we all stay within that framework. The Bountiful Children's Foundation is an NGO that addresses malnutrition among Latter-day Saints and other children in the developing world. The foundation is currently serving the needs of malnourished children in over 200 congregations in 20 countries. Recently, the foundation expanded its operation to Madagascar, one of the poorest and yet most beautiful countries in the world. This session reports on the work of the foundation in Madagascar and challenges of addressing children's malnutrition in an increasingly global church. Our two presenters will be Bob Rees and Gloria Gardner-Rees. Bob Rees is co-founder and current vice president of the Bountiful Children's Foundation. Over the past decade, he has worked on behalf of malnourished children in Guatemala, the Philippines, Colombia, Haiti, Kiribati. Did I get that right? Boy, I would have no idea to say it that way. And recently with his wife in Madagascar. Gloria Gardner-Rees has studied with both John and Thomas, I assume that's John T. Kessler and Thomas McConkie, okay, in the IPP Institute, Lower Lights, and Pacific Integrals Generating Transformative Change. Teaching in China, India, and Nepal, plus traveling in the Philippines, Spain, and Madagascar, have fed her awareness, seeing others where they are. She is the mother of six. And now we will turn the time over to the presenters.
Thank you, Stephen. It's so nice to be introduced by the voice of the Sunstone podcast. I don't know how we're so lucky. I'm so glad. I'm giving a session this evening, later this afternoon, at 5, called Radiant Mormonism, which is based on a lecture and an article that Richard Bushman wrote. He was trying to solicit funds for Mormon studies, and he found that a number of people he asked said, it's really a good cause, but I'm already doing something. I'm giving to the children of lepers in India. I'm helping malnourished children in New Guinea. I'm supporting cancer research. And he said, I was so amazed to find that so many Latter-day Saints were doing things beyond what they were expected to do. And that so much of the work that I've been involved in is really inspired by that ethic that we are called to help repair the world. The Jews have an ethic called Tikkun Olam, which means we all have a responsibility to try and repair the world, to make it better. We may not succeed, but we're never excused from trying. So a number of people, and one of the really delights of the work I've been doing for the past 15 years with originally the Leo Hona, now the Bountiful Children's Foundation, is that when I travel and do this work in other parts of the world, I find other Latter-day Saints are there doing other things that parallel and sometimes support our work. So when Gloria and I were in Madagascar, we couldn't have done our work without the help of another NGO there called Elevatus. And the staff of Elevatus was so helpful to us that I wanted to give them an opportunity to talk about their work. So Michael O'Day, who is a returned missionary from Madagascar, has set up this foundation, which is very impressive. And one of the things we find is that many returned missionaries come back and want to do something for the people they spent 2 years serving. So the first part of the presentation today will be Michael O'Day, and I'm very pleased to have him come up and talk about the important work they're doing, and then Gloria and I will talk about the work of Bountiful. Well, I will say one other thing before Michael comes up. One of the other NGOs that we had the privilege of interacting with and who helped us in our work is a doctor, Letter to Saint Doctor, who joined with two other doctors to form another NGO called Mata Health. And one of the things that he said that they're having doctors who volunteer to go to Madagascar and to perform surgery, short-term clinics, hands-on lectures to physicians who are native to Madagascar. And they're seeking volunteers, doctors who can go and do that, medical supplies, and donations to help fund their work. So if any of you are interested in supporting Mata Health, let me know, and I have a way to connect you. And here's Michael O'Day.
Thank you, Bob, for the opportunity, giving me some of your time to speak about the work that we do. So to help you understand a little bit more the connection between Bountiful Children's Foundation and Elevatus, we are their in-country partner on the ground. So Madagascar is a very difficult place to travel to and start work in because it's just so different and so foreign, and it's very underdeveloped. And so we were impressed by the work that Bountiful Children's Foundation does, and a Latter-day Saint connected us. And it was actually someone who is from Madagascar, and she came to the U.S. to go to BYU, and she lives here now. And she has connections with Bountiful Children's Foundation, and she said, I would love for Bountiful Children's Foundation to come help the children of the malnourished children of Madagascar. And so she connected us together, and we've been working together for the last 2 years now in Madagascar with great success. And so Bob had asked me to share a little bit about my story. How did I get involved with Madagascar? So as Bob mentioned, I was called to serve a mission in Madagascar back in 2000. I was called to serve a mission in Madagascar back in 2007. And I fell in love with the country. I fell in love with the people. But it was also, this is me, much younger and much lighter than I am now. Beautiful country, beautiful people. But really extreme poverty. To explain a little bit about Madagascar, most people don't even, there are people who don't even know Madagascar exists outside of the little emblem on the game of Risk or the animated film. Madagascar is a country that's actually larger than the state of California, closer to the size of Texas, with a population greater than the entire continent of Australia. So it's not a small place. However, it's very unknown and very forgotten. It's been ranked as one of the 10 poorest countries in the world for the last 20 years. The most recent number shows 92% of the inhabitants are living below the international poverty line of $2 a day, with 77% living in extreme poverty. And so this was on my mission, this was my first time being exposed to this. And you can't help but want to help every single person you see, but as a missionary, you just can't do that. And so I came back really conflicted. I knew I wanted to do something, but didn't think I really could. And about 3 months after I got back from my mission, I was preparing a Sunday school lesson on the baptismal covenant. And I came across the scripture in Mosiah that I had read many times but took on new meaning. It says, as ye are desirous to come into the fold of God and be called his people and are willing to bear one another's burdens, that they may be light, yea, and are willing to mourn with those that mourn, yea, and comfort those that stand in need of comfort, and to stand as a witness of God at all times and in all things and in all places that ye may be in, even until death, that ye may be redeemed of God, to be numbered with those of the first resurrection, that ye may have eternal life. And even though I'd read the scripture many times, when I read it after recently returning from my mission, it hit me in a way that it never had before, and I received one of the strongest spiritual impressions of my entire life, that I knew a people who were burdened, that were mourning, and that standed in need of comfort, and that if I forgot those people that the Lord had connected me to, that I would be, and didn't do something to help them, that I would be failing to fulfill the covenant that I had made at baptism. And it also came with a warning that if I did, if I ignored this prompting and ceased to be involved in helping the people of Madagascar, that I felt very strongly prompted that I would get caught up in the false dream, false belief that happiness is somehow connected to money, that I would spend my life pursuing the American dream of wealth and never find true happiness, that I would abandon my one path to receiving it in this life and potentially jeopardize my eternal salvation. And so I realized that I needed to do something, but I was 21 years old, a BYU student, didn't know anything about starting a nonprofit organization, so I started taking as many courses as were offered on international development, nonprofit management at BYU. And I really was impressed with the results of microfinance. And so the very first thing you learn when you're studying international development, nonprofit management, they say there's so much duplication in the field. Everybody says, ooh, I had a really cool experience, I want to start a nonprofit. So many people say that, and a lot of people do. But there's so much duplication and waste of resources in duplication. And so I did research on the organizations in Madagascar and found one that had gotten a grant to do microfinance, but they didn't have the program set up yet. It was the only organization I could find. And so I worked with them for a summer and set up a microfinance program for them. This is me in their literacy centers. Got to set up a microfinance program. Very successful. While I was with them, I had the opportunity to have lunch with the director of UNICEF for Madagascar. And he was getting ready to retire after a 30-year career with UNICEF in Africa. In UNICEF, every 3 years, they get moved to a new country. And so he had worked, Madagascar was his 10th country in his work. And he said, my entire life I was told and believed that Ethiopia was the poorest country in Africa. And he said, about halfway through my career, I got stationed in Ethiopia, and it was the poorest country I had ever been to in Africa. He said, and as I worked in other countries afterwards, the poverty didn't compare to Ethiopia until I came to Madagascar. And he said, by far, Madagascar is the poorest country in Africa. And other countries in Africa are slowly getting better. He said, Madagascar in my 3 years here has gotten worse. He said, every other country in Africa has so many nonprofits trying to help. Almost too many, too much duplication. He said, but Madagascar has so few, hardly any organizations trying to help. And he said, I wondered why that was, and it's just people don't know about Madagascar, it's just forgotten. And so hearing that, I realized that I would not be duplicating efforts by starting a nonprofit in Madagascar. And so shortly thereafter, I started Elevatus Foundation, and we hired 3 part-time employees because we had limited funding to tackle, but Bob will be talking more about the malnutrition rates in Madagascar. To try and tackle that, we did square foot gardening. And then a few years later, we actually received a $4,000 grant that enabled us to start issuing microloans in Madagascar. And so we expanded and started doing that as well. And here is a video.
Langsung siap jumlah pirga di Vandria Tanah Nariu panau keraru reparasi saya masak Evanisi asa apa yang nak tanya lupa Tona Eva lava kuno na nova kraro yun tena na to kna harta vana na 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 no asa hapa uta ne farta si na da ita lava tane sanir tirta na na asa hapa kuta na fanova na kraro
uta ndre ni kuro pera tira he had a dream to become a tour guide. A dream that would allow him to interact with tourists and those individuals that come to Madagascar. He said, I've seen some of my friends. It was more for the people online listening, potentially. He said, but that's really difficult because it requires a lot of education and money and resources to be a tour guide, which he does not have. He said, I received a 50,000 RARI loan from Elevatus Foundation. He used it to buy tools for repairing shoes. He said he's still repaying that loan a little at a time. But already it's helped him solve his problems. He says, I don't struggle anymore. Buying tools one at a time, he has all the tools that he needs. He said he was able to buy everything that he needed. So it'll be a long time before he needs to buy tools again. It's also very easy for him to repay his loan. It's not a hardship at all. He said, the money that I make each day makes it possible for me to pay off the loan. When I finish paying this loan, I want to borrow again. I'm thinking of borrowing more so I can expand my business. I don't want to just repair shoes. I want to progress to making new sandals and shoes. I also hope to hire somebody else who can help me accomplish even more. That would really increase my income. All right. So, microfinance has been very successful for our organization. It helps parents pay for food for their children and send their kids to school. However, it takes a while for people to grow a business and to really become self-sustaining. And so, in the meantime, their children aren't in school and their children aren't being fed, which makes the work of Bountiful Children's Foundation all the more important. Only 25% of kids in Madagascar complete high school. And the 75% that don't will never be able to enter the formal employment sector. That number of 75% of kids that don't complete school mirrors the number of 77% of people that live in extreme poverty. If a child is denied an education, they're pretty much never going to escape extreme poverty. It's just the reality of life in Madagascar. And those that complete a secondary level education, high school, they make twice the income on average as somebody who only completes elementary level education. And so to show you what we do with that, I'm going to show you one more video, and then I'll turn the time back over to Bob. The sad truth about people that are struggling in such severe poverty as is the case in Madagascar is that makes them targets for human traffickers. According to the U.S. State Department, Madagascar is a source country for human trafficking. And a lot of the trafficking actually happens within the country itself. Madagascar is a tourist destination for sexual tourism. People come to Madagascar because prostitution is legal, and local officials turn a blind eye when prostitutes are underage. The most upsetting thing to learn is that according to the State Department, many of the children that are trafficked in Madagascar are trafficked with the participation of family members. Parents willingly turn their kids over to these traffickers. And when I heard that at first, I wondered, there's no way that's true. How is that possible that a parent would willingly let their kid go off with a stranger when they have no idea what's going to happen to their kids? In the villages where we work currently, the only option is to wake up at dawn and go to a rock quarry and break rocks all day long until the sun goes down, and do it again the next day and the next day, 6 days a week, breaking rocks by hand. When you talk to parents and ask them what their biggest concerns are for their children, it's, how do I feed my child? How do I educate my child? How do I make sure my child has a better future than I do? And so when a stranger comes and offers them a chance at a better life, even if it's a long shot, parents, they'll take that chance, the chance of giving their kids a better life, because the alternative is awful. So the question became, how do you protect the children of the families that Elevatus Foundation works with while they're slowly learning and lifting themselves out of poverty? How do you protect their children who are vulnerable to being trafficked in the meantime? And the answer we came up with was education. We talked to the parents, why don't your kids attend school after elementary school? First answer was, we can't afford tuition. Okay, well, if somebody paid tuition, would you send your kid to school? Well, no. Well, why not? Well, it's too far. Okay, well, if we paid for your kid to, we paid for transportation for your kid to go to school and we paid the tuition, would you send your kid? Well, no. Why not? Well, in Madagascar, we think about here, people live paycheck to paycheck, and that's poverty here. There, people live day to day. If you're sick one day and you don't go out to work, you don't make money, your family doesn't eat that day. And so if they're sending their kids off to school, every single child they send off to school, that's a child that's not working in the rock quarry to make money to pay for their food that day. And so if they send their kid off to school, their kid's not going to eat that day. And so, okay, so if we transport your kid, we pay their tuition, and we feed them breakfast and lunch, would you send your kid to school? Yes, we would send our kid to school. And so that's what we did. I'd like to invite you to go to our website, elevatusfoundation.org, to learn more about the work that we're doing in Madagascar to protect these children, and to learn more about what you can do to make a difference in their lives. So thank you. That is my time. I'm going to be passing out these little flyers. If you want to learn more about the work we do or sponsor a child, the address is on here. The work that, you know, getting children a secondary education isn't even possible if they've suffered developmental delays from malnutrition. And that's why the work that Bountiful Children's Foundation does is so important, because the developmental delays that come from being malnourished from birth to the age of 5 cannot be made up. And so I'll turn the time back over to Bob to talk to you about the wonderful work that they're doing with us in Madagascar.
Can we ask questions?
Sure. We'll have some questions at the end. You can ask Michael or Gloria or me or anyone. You can even ask Stephen. He has the answers to all questions. So, I just can't tell you how moving it was. Gloria and I visited that quarry to see 80-year-old grandmothers and 4-year-old children breaking up rocks, little rocks to bigger, or big rocks to square square rocks for construction. And those kids, are, as she, Michael said, they're born up to from morning till night. They're there 6 days a week. Breaking up rocks. The work of the Liahona Children's Foundation, let me go back a second, there we go. Tim, can we have the lights? Tim Heaton, who's back on the lights, is also the CEO of Bountiful, and he and his brother and some of their family were the pioneers in Madagascar. They went, 2 years ago, Tim? And kind of opened it up. So Gloria and I came after to build on the work that they did. Bountiful Children's Foundation, I mentioned, used to be Liahona. We changed our name a year ago, but we're the same organization. And mentioned, we in the introduction, we started out with one congregation in Ecuador, and now in 200 congregations in 20 countries, and hopefully continuing to grow. Our mission, which you can read here, is to provide nutritional supplements for pregnant women, lactating mothers, and to nurture the potential of infants and toddlers to lead healthy, productive, and self-reliant lives by eliminating malnutrition. Malnutrition among children is one of the enormous problems in the world. We concentrate on Latter-day Saint children, but we open our screenings to all children. So in many of the places that we screen, up to half of the children are Latter-day Saint and non-Latter-day Saint children. And so we are trying to do what we can to address the needs of both of them. This is the list of the countries we are in, and with mentioned Madagascar being our most recent one. This is the intervention package we do. We screen children. We set up screenings with through area presidencies and state presidencies, and come into a ward on a particular day. We take the children's information, their demographic information, names, ages, gender, their height, and their weight. And within 5 minutes, we can tell whether that child is malnourished. We are working with BYU in a number of ways, but one is that they're doing really important research on the work that we're doing. This is an important graphic to show you the difference between a normal child. On the left, a child who is what we call wasting, which is low weight for their height, stunting, low height for the age, and then the combination of wasting and stunting for children. And long-term effects of this for children, as you can see, and as Michael pointed out, we begin to see some of these effects in kids unable to go to school, or if they go to school, they can't perform. They not only are suffer physically, but they also suffer, intellectually. And this is the important thing. We can provide the nutritional needs for a child for a year for under $100. And if that child gets that nutrition during these critical first 3 years and they keep their cognitive capacity, their chance of returning that investment, I think the different estimates, 30 to 60 times what you invest in a child will be returned when that child grows up, gets educated, and goes into the workforce. So the reason we concentrate on the first 1,000 days is that is the critical time for brain and body development. This shows you the difference of a 3-year-old child who is normal, malnourished, and one who has extreme neglect, and which is 90% of the brain develops during those first 3 years, first 1,000 days, and if you miss that window, you miss it forever. So a child who does not receive proper nourishment will be cognitively compromised for the remainder of their lives. And the significance of this is you can see a child who is severely malnourished loses, drops one, the IQ score drops from 100 to 85, 85 to 70. So within that 3-year period, a child who's severely malnourished, if the child began with an IQ of 100, that IQ drops down, and you can see then why a child in this condition is incapable of going to school or learning. This shows you these are the countries that we're in, beginning with Bolivia and ending in Zimbabwe, and the green shows the number of normal children in those. The orange are children at risk. The red are the chronically malnourished. The purple are the moderately acute malnutrition, and the SAM in the black are the severely malnourished children. So you can see that in all of these countries, the number of children who are not malnourished is really in the minority, except in Kiribati. Kiribati is a nation, this island nation in the middle of the Pacific. When I was there, I realized not only did they're suffering from malnutrition, but they're going to be the first country in the world that will lose all of their land mass to rising seas. Everybody on Kiribati is going to have to move to another country within the next 20 to 30 years.
Bob, can you tip the microphone closer to your mouth?
Thank you for saying that. There. Shall I go back and start over? No, I won't. This shows you the change that the Bountiful Children's Foundation is able to realize within 6 months of our providing nutrition supplements to the children. Well, we provide the nutrition. We come back in 6 months and rescreen, and we find that the results of just providing a simple nutritional supplement produces a profound difference in a child's nutritional health. This shows you in the districts that we just screened in April in Madagascar. And again, you can see through the percentage of children who are in the normal range, and the at-risk, the malnourished, and in the extreme and acute malnourished state. So it is, as Michael pointed out, it is a country in which there is extreme malnutrition. And these are two Madagascar boys born the same day, and they're age 5. And the child on the left had a normal nutritional life up to age 5. The boy on the right was severely malnourished. And so you see the difference between what happens, and think about the significance of this with a number of children, Latter-day Saint children, who are growing up in the condition Sitraka, as opposed to Meranto, and what the implications of that for the church in Madagascar. So this just gives you a summary of Satraca and the chronic malnutrition, what we call the silent yet deadly disease, which is affecting over half the children in Madagascar. In one ward that we screened, we found 90% of the children malnourished. The least was 54.7%. So you can see there's a huge need for this. I'm going to now turn the time over to my wife, Gloria, who was helpful companion on and so much better looking than I am. And she's going to tell a little bit about Madagascar and something about our work. And when she's finished, I'm going to have Jake Zollinger, a good friend of ours who accompanied us on this trip as a helper, to give you some idea of what the opportunity we provide for people to go and help on our NutriTours. Gloria Gardner-Reese.
While the lights are still up, I want you to see this small package. The food is produced in the country, as close to the country as possible for these children. This is called Plumpy Nut, and you'll see one picture of a little girl eating this. So this is what is, it's sucked out of it, and it's completely, there's no texture to it, so that even a six-month-old child, after it's finished nursing, can use it. Well, I'm going to divert from the children for just a moment then with Madagascar. Yes, we've got... How did this... Maybe we didn't get the same version here. We'll talk about the children that of Madagascar. So this is some of the experience we had with these babies and their parents, the measuring we would do. There's a great deal of joy in knowing that we're helping them. This is Jake, and then... There's the Plumpy Nut. And Tim in the light blue shirt is our... he was the one who drove us everywhere and was so very valuable. Manda in the pink is working with Elevatus as the area supervisor. And Monica is... Monica is in the pink. She's with Elevatus. But she works, she does the screenings. And Manda is the supervisor for the country with Bountiful. This is where they're waiting to come in to be screened, not knowing. Again, waiting. This is the largest group we had in... And I'm taking their pictures afterwards to keep them diverted from waiting. And they're posing for me there. This is a dab. And this is Julian, who handles Elevatus for... the whole country director and his wife and new child. And this is after that screening there in Tana in the capital. And we had so many missionaries who came and helped us. We couldn't have done it with all those people without their help, I think. Well, here's Madagascar. We got there, and maybe I wondered where were all of the monkeys and the elephants and the zebras and the giraffes, but they're in Africa, not in Madagascar. What they do have is lemurs, and in one of the two parks that we went to, they were formerly domesticated, and so they came on our shoulders. Otherwise, in the first one, we walked for a very long time before we saw them, even in the trees, jumping so gracefully from tree to tree. I was just such a surprise to have this little animal. So there are alligators, and there are the iguana, other creatures, boa constrictors, strange things. And this is the zebu, and it's an Asian animal. The others, this one is not strictly in Madagascar, but it is said to be a secret emblem of Madagascar. And the poinsettia is something that they prize because when you fold the leaf in half, it looks like Madagascar, the country itself. I think understanding the history will help you to realize why it's not so African as it is Asian. It's probably the last landmass that was populated by humans, which about 500 AD, which may be the reason why so much biodiversity was able to thrive there. It attracted the Arab and the Persian traders about 600 AD, then settlers from present-day Indonesia. Migrants from Africa arrived about 1000 AD. It was then a pirate stronghold in the 17th and 18th century and a slave trading center into the 19th century. It had 33 years rule by a mad queen, and this was the royal palace. You can see it everywhere in the capital where you go, it's on the highest hill. She broke many trade agreements and ended up eradicating Christians by half. Afterwards, the island was colonized by the French in 1896 for the timber and the exotic spices. The Malagasy people finally regained autonomy in 1960 after several rebellions. So when you ask why is it poor, you can see all this governmental instability and corruption. I'm looking at the skies here. Divert to that for a moment. Because of its being an island, the panorama of sky was just magnificent. And here the sky also, but you can see they're drying their clothes on the side of this canal. So because of this governmental instability and corruption, the political power and money grabs, the people didn't actually benefit from the rich resources that are in this country. And it was like that in the Philippines when I was there too. So there were terrible roads caused problems. Only 11% of the roads are paved, and most of them are potholed and muddy, and almost no rail travel. They have some rails, but they don't function anymore. And so it made... this is one of the good roads here. And some of the village life. So this getting the produce to the cities is hard without roads. And also getting medical services when you need them. But there's rich land of agriculture there. And a lot of it is at the expense of the forests. And the forest is where the biodiversity and the medical possibilities are. You see up on the top of the hill is that Rava, the royal palace up there. You know, only 12% of the population has running water and flushing toilets. So even though people carry on, they do it and don't realize what they're missing. There's one physician for every 6,000 people in the country, and Jackson, who's with Mata Health, found in an area with 1 million people, he could only find one pediatrician there. And so there's only 65% literacy. So this is part of the, this is very close to Elevada School. These children were out here, but it's an example of some of the roads. Let's see. All right. In the gold rush in California in 1849, that's what it was like in Madagascar when sapphire deposits were found in 1998. It created a fever. And they have the largest reserves of sapphires. But much of the mining is illegal, but it doesn't stop tens of thousands of Malagasy who flooded in illegally, Malagasy, the people of Madagascar, illegally uprooting trees and diverting streams in hopes of finding gemstones to help lift them out of poverty. So today, about $150 million worth of gems are smuggled out each year, but almost none of that dollar value goes to the actual miners. Yet it's a huge part of their livelihood in spite of the fact. I mean, they may be just there providing water for the ones who are doing the mining or doing the smuggling. But whatever they can to provide for their families, of course, they're going to try and do that. But with this mining, a lot of the forests were lost, and probably from the pre-human time to today, 90% of that forest is gone. Probably in 1950, half of it was there. City life. Bob described it in something he wrote out as a report. Travel during daylight would have taken less time had we walked on our knees. Just imagine a city of 3.5 million inhabitants with no traffic lights, very narrow winding streets crowded with vendors and pedestrians who seem to have a seventh sense of stepping aside just at the right moment. So Tim, our driver, said that they used to have traffic lights, but half of them didn't work and the other half were stolen. There are vendors on just about every square inch. So Bob thought a good title for Tana or Antananarivo. I'm not saying that quite right, but the longer name of the capital city is often called Tana. Everybody's selling something. Nobody's buying anything. Yes. All right. All right. I just wanted to tell you that this is the place where a lot of them are going to church. Two wards are going here. In 2001, it was renovated so that it could accompany the mission home, a distribution center, a family history center. But Madagascar didn't have any Mormons there until a man in 1986 in Bordeaux, France, was able to join the church, and he came and taught people in his homes, and it went from there. So just from 1991 really is about the time that that started. I want to read one poem, and then I'm finished. It's Vachel Lindsay. The Leaden-Eyed. Let not young souls be smothered out before they do quaint deeds and fully flaunt their pride. It's the world's one crime. It's babes grow dull. It's poor are ox-like, limp and leaden-eyed. Not that they starve, but starve so dreamlessly. Not that they sow, but that they seldom reap. Not that they serve, but have no God to serve. Not that they die, but that they die like sheep. And these are students at the school in the garden they're growing. And the people who have the gospel, it's a much brighter future for them and those who have schooling. Thank you.
And one of the things that we do is to make an opportunity, as I mentioned, for people to go on NutriTours. And our good friend Jake Zollinger, who is in this picture, accompanied us and was so helpful. Jake has also been to Guatemala, and I've asked him to take a couple of minutes and just talk about this experience. Jake. How's that?
We got 10 minutes left in the session.
In just 5 minutes, I will give you my view of how two trips to Guatemala and to Madagascar were experienced by both myself and I think by the participants in those countries. The three Guatemalans were our driver, his mother, the coordinator for all Central America, and our translator. The trip lasted 7 days on the ground. Besides me, there were two women and two teenage daughters from the United States. Two of the natives spoke okay English, and the driver was excellent. They were polite and grateful that we were in their country to help. Because we Americans had paid in advance, all the expenses were arranged and paid by our hosts. This was a very comfortable arrangement. The food was always excellent. The hotels were sufficient. If, like me, you grew up on a farm in the 1950s and were not spoiled by nonsense like air conditioning and hot water, we weighed, measured, and recorded data on participating kids in five chapels scattered from the cities to high in the beautiful primitive mountains. We also visited 10 LDS homes where we installed aluminum cook stove tops onto cinder block supports in the kitchens of homes that were makeshift shacks composed of adobe, discarded boards, occasional secondhand pieces of metal roofing, and a lot of branches and tree logs. We brought soap, homemade beds, and aluminum smokestacks to vent the kitchen smoke. All these were modern luxuries for the recipients who had, as far as I could discern, lived till then with essentially like their ancestors for centuries or even millennia before. How absurd or obscene, I thought, that we were there snapping photos with smartphones. These people, nearly all female, were excited and grateful. I was honored on this trip to build an outhouse for a family who lived very high in the mountains, their first. There were three generations in the home, dirt floor, leaky roof, no electricity, and a nice garden to survive on. Between stops, they took me to parks, outdoor markets, and the usual tourist attractions. I met many kind new friends. In Madagascar, I did similar work and again received a first-class tourist experience. The hotels were quality and all the food was great. We had three young LDS people who drove and translated and were entertained, wondering if I was really the Old Testament Jacob reincarnated like I told them I was, or just an ordinary Utah Mormon with the same name and early onset dementia. Again, I was delighted with the sights, sounds, and insights into a new culture. In this experience, I enjoyed the company of Bob and Gloria. We shared questions and insights into our common faith over many years. The experience of seeing desperate mothers, mostly Mormon, who only desire basic nutrition for their infants and children at a crucial age, when one-third of the food in all the United States is wasted, only highlights the tragedy of the gross inequality among nations and classes of human beings. When I tell friends and ward members about these tours and their purpose, I get a lot of flattery about how wonderful I am for my participation in the Bountiful Children's Fund. What they don't know is that these monitor and data collection events happen regularly in 20 countries with the help of LDS women and men and sometimes missionaries in the stakes where the kids are being served. They certainly don't need me. While I sensed our presence and concern was valued by our hosts and that we came all the way from America to attend to them, the reality for me was a delightful educational and spiritual visit in a new country where I was changed for the better, humbled, educated, and blessed by the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. And it was really wonderful to have Jake there helping us and interacting with these children. I'm just going to show a couple more slides, and I'd like to open this up for questions. Tim, you're the light man. So I mentioned this ways to get involved with the new tour being one. You can adopt a community. My family has adopted a stake. My stake in Northern California has adopted a stake. For $5,000, you can feed 100 children in one of these countries. So it's an amazing investment. I sometimes give my grandchildren a gift for Christmas, which is a $100 donation to the Bountiful Children's Foundation. If you just go to a couple of meals and a couple of movies less a year, you could provide the nutrition for a single child. We take these trips, as mentioned. We've got one going to Peru in January. So not only do you get to help malnourished children, but you get to see Machu Picchu, which is worth going that far to see for sure. This is the adopted community that I mentioned. To look into the faces of these children is to look into the faces of our own children with a little bit of imagination of what it would be like if they did not have enough. Now, one of the things people say, well, those children don't look malnourished. Malnourished is often a silent situation because their kids are getting fed, but they're not getting protein, they're not getting micronutrients, and so their bodies and their brains are not developing. Bishop Burton of the presiding bishop in a conference a couple of years ago said during the Great Depression, the commitment of he's quoting President Grant, the commitment of church leaders to relieve human suffering was as certain as it was irrevocable. President Grant wanted a system that would reach out and take care of the people no matter what the cost. He said it would even go so far as to close the seminaries, shut down missionary work for a period, even close the temples, but they would not let the people go hungry. No matter how many temples we build, he said, no matter how large our membership grows, no matter how positively we are perceived in the eyes of the world, should we fail in this great core commandment to succor the weak, lift up the hands which hang down, strengthen the feeble knees, or turn our hearts from those who suffer and mourn, we are under condemnation and cannot please the Lord. People ask, what can I do? I give you Elder Holland's response to this in conference 3 years ago. He says, I don't know exactly how each of you should fulfill your obligation to those who do not or cannot always help themselves, but I know that God knows, and he will help you and guide you in compassionate acts of discipleship if you're conscientiously wanting and praying and looking for ways to keep a commandment he has given us again and again. I love the 25th chapter of Matthew because every one of us stands condemned before it. I was reading last year the Aramaic translation of that, which this is the language which Jesus spoke. And in that he said, inasmuch as you give food to one of these, my little brothers and sisters, not the least of these, but Jesus is saying, one of these, my little brothers and sisters, you gave it unto me. So I go, we can have the light, Tim. The motto for me of the Bountiful Children's Foundation is Mother Teresa, who says, we can do no great things, but we can do only small things with great love. And all of us can do that. So, Tim has some flyers that you can get when you go out. There's some envelopes if you'd like to contribute. But the important thing is to do something, and it is really joyful work. But in the time we have left, if you have questions, Michael, I, anyone else will try and answer them.
And we have about 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay. Please. The church welfare system works differently in the developing world than it works here. You will be pleased to know that a year ago, we, members of the foundation, met with some general authorities, including a couple of members of the Corps of the 12th, with the Relief Society president, with the head of humanitarian service, and we signed a memo of agreement. The church said, let us work together with you. They created a memo of understanding, and Tim has received that from them. We are now beginning to work with the church in some of these countries. But when people say, well, why isn't the church doing more? Why somebody said, the big question I always ask is, why am I not doing more? So I'm pleased that we are beginning to work with the church to address this problem. Thank you for your question. Anyone else? Yes.
I've been one that's been working with charities for quite a while. I went on a choice expedition to Mexico and worked with Rhodes Foundation in Guatemala. And because I donate, I get dozens of letters every day from all these different charities, and I don't know which ones are most effective. One of the concerns I've had is countries that have military rebel fighting that impacts the people, like in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Is there that problem in Madagascar or not? Are they all suffering from?
No, there's not a problem with military conflict or occupation. One thing I can say to you, 100% of the donations that people go to help the children.
I'm very impressed with that. Also, in my own confusion about what to do, I keep thinking, is anybody, including birth control and any of these NGOs that are going out? Because I know in Africa, I've been working with Congolese refugees for 3 years, and they consider they should each try and have 10 children, even if they can't feed them.
Yes, this is a problem that we do not have the means to address, but it is a world problem. The fact of the matter is that there are so many things that can be done. One can be overwhelmed with that, or one can begin doing something. And you will be pleased to know our newest country is probably going to be the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Okay, my other question was, my good neighbors just got back from a mission in Reunion, which is part of the Madagascar mission, and I followed them on their mission through emails. Does Reunion, does it have the poverty level that Madagascar has?
Reunion is like Francis Hawaii.
Oh, so the answer is no.
No.
Okay.
No, it's not a poor country. It's not underdeveloped at all.
And then my other question was the same for as far as you answer.
Thank you so much for coming. We have a booth out there. If you pass out, Tim will give you a brochure and support the good work of Elevatus as well as the Bountiful Children's Foundation. You can Google us and you can find out more about our work. Thank you so much for coming.